Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
McFarland, McFarland Energy, thanks so much for sponsoring the Brad Foe Show once again. Today, we got a sort of a combination of a Brad Foe Show on the go and sort of a sit down. So I sat down with Noah Song. Noah Song, former Red Sox prospect, who was picked in the Rule 5 draft by the Philadelphia Phillies. Obviously, he was on track to becoming one of the Red Sox best prospects, but he had his naval commitments that he had to adhere to for the last few years. Finally, after getting picked in the Rule 5 draft by the Philadelphia Phillies, he gets the waiver to come back and play baseball. So that's it in a nutshell. That's it in a simplistic form. So interview I did alongside the Boston Globe's Alex Speer. But I felt like it was important to talk to Song. He is an interesting guy, by far the most interesting Rule 5 guy in baseball right now, and potentially a really interesting guy that might be returned to the Red Sox ultimately if he doesn't stick with the Phillies. All right, well, here you go, Noah Song.
I think the reintegration into it was like a little bit easier than I thought it was going to be, I guess, because I don't say easier, but like it was easier to like assimilate back into it, because like I did play baseball for a long time, and so it was kind of like coming back to something that you used to know, and it makes it a lot easier to kind of like get back in the groovy end, and then before I knew it, it's like, oh, I remember how to do this, like at least being in the baseball environment. Pitching, I'm still trying to figure that out, I think, right now, but there's work to be done, as always.
How regularly had you, like, you know, over the time that you're training, that, you know, that you are at aviation school, like, how often are you throwing? How often are you allowing yourself to think about baseball?
Like, very infrequently, and I guess the easiest way of putting it is, like, at the beginning, there was, like, pretty much nothing, and it wasn't until, like, the Rule 5 draft happened that, like, I started to actually, like, consistently try to pick up a ball, and even then it was still like infrequent, I guess. It's hard to say any like specific like amounts, because it really was kind of just as the time allowed, or as whatever, you know, just like it was not something that we had a schedule for or anything.
So you weren't even throwing like bullpens in the last two or three years, or whatever?
There was no time off amount at all. I threw one bullpen like the week before I showed up to camp here, just to try to get back on a mound, and it was kind of all over the place, but at least I got on a mound. But before that, no. Since 2019, Team USA, I never been on a mound.
Did it feel strange when you get up on the mound?
It almost felt like uncomfortable, like when you have a bad start or something, and it's like you just can't get comfortable on the mound at all. And that's kind of like that's the best way I can explain it. It's like there was never like a pitch where I was like, oh, that's the one. It's just the whole thing kind of was just very uncomfortable.
When last we talked, which was I think around the Premier 12 tournament, you described two plan A's, you know, like and it felt like at that point, you know, a dual track professional, you know, a professional and kind of vocational life was within reach.
Yeah.
Was there a point where you were like, that is no longer in reach? You know, that like I'm going to be one track. I'm going to be like I'm going to make, you know, much in very satisfying way. My career is going to be in the Navy.
Are you saying like just
was there a point where
baseball?
You thought that baseball became unrealistic?
Yeah, I think every year that passed that I was away from the game, I think it became more and more kind of like, okay, there's less chance of it coming back or happening, or even if I do go back, there's less chance of success, I guess. But at the same time, it's not something that I ever wanted to give up on because, you know, Mitch Harris was in longer than I was, and he still was able to come back. So nothing's impossible, and I'm a true believer in that. But at the same time, it's like I was realistic with myself and saying, you know, it's only going to be harder the longer you are away from the game. So, but I think because like the focus is so strong, and like because we like aviation, like we love our job so much, like whether you're pilot or NFO, like we just love it, that it's like it kind of allows you to like really just enjoy what you're doing and not worry about the fact that you may have like not had an opportunity somewhere else. So I kind of like, I guess I never really was like disappointed by anything. So
did you follow baseball?
Not a whole lot, especially since when I reported flight school was COVID and the season kind of was like kind of a wash then anyways. And then I just never really got back into watching it after that. And that's not just baseball, but like really any professional sports. And a large portion of that was like a lot of the times we're not really talking about sports in the military when we're going out, you know, on a training exercise or something. So part of it's that too. But
how much contact did you have? Ben Crockett was the one with whom you had most of your contact. Yeah.
Yes.
How frequent was that contact?
He tried, like he definitely wanted to keep communications throughout the time. And I tried to respond and do everything that I could in the time, but at the same time I told him, you know, there's really nothing, there's not a whole lot to pass on, there's no really information on anything. I kept him updated on like every step that was happening, but I think he also respected the fact that like, well, if there's not a whole lot to you know, bug him about, then we don't really want to like bother him if he's like in the middle of flight training. So
yeah.
But he was very respectful of that, the whole organization was. So
how much, like, you know, were you surprised at how challenging it was to navigate the bureaucracy of pursuing this? Like, it seemed like it was a it was very hard to get answers at different points.
Yeah, it's actually, as far as getting I don't want to say like getting answers, but like getting updates, I guess. Like, I know that a part of it is not because they're not trying to withhold any information from anybody. It's just a matter of who's handling it at a certain time, where it is exactly, and you know, some people might not, that somebody might get it and they might not know the full thing, and there's just a lot of communication or a lot of miscommunication at points. I don't think nobody was trying to withhold information or anything like that. I actually thought it was an easier process than what everybody thought, because I thought the routing for all of it was going to be a lot more like unprecedented and like just ambiguous, but it actually ended up being where then my CO was like, hey, there's you know, MIL PERS 1920 or 1920 240, and it covers your exact situation, and all you have to do is basically like fill this out, and there's like a template essentially for what I wanted to do. So it kind of was more straightforward than I thought as far as routing it. Once it was up and sent away, it's kind of out of my control, and it's just a waiting game at that point, whether or not it was a yes or no.
With weird policy, with like policy changes happening to
yes.
like your circumstance.
Yes,
like,
yes. That's another thing that's out of the control.
Yeah.
And I don't know what affects and what doesn't as far as like retroactively affecting and all that. So that was part of the reason why I just kind of didn't think about any of it. I'm like, it's either a yes or no at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So
two where were you questions. Where were you when the Rule 5 stuff happened?
I was in my room, or actually I was in my living room in my rental house. And
your rental house where? Where were you living?
I was in Jacksonville, Florida. Yeah. Yeah. And because that was where I was stationed. And I was not watching it at all because my agent told me you probably won't have to worry about it. You know, sure enough, like my pitching coach from the Naval Academy, Coach Applegate, Bobby Applegate, was the one who texted me, and he told me, he's like, Rule 5. And I was like, I didn't know I was the one who got picked. Because I thought he was talking about somebody else, but then I was like, who else would have got Rule 5? And then like I went to my computer and like looked it up and everything, and said like, oh, Philly's Rule 5 draft, and all this song, and I was like, oh no, what happened? Like, what do I do with this? So, and then I started texting my agent, trying to figure out what that meant and everything, and it just kind of was a learning process like for the rest of the day.
What did it sink in that you're like, oh man, I'm gonna be in a
because you still weren't clear by then. Yeah, exactly. I think that's the thing, is like I read it all online, and I was like, well, it doesn't matter what it says, because I'm not even like cleared to play yet. And then even if I am cleared to play, I knew that there was a lot of things that can still happen. There's no you know, there's definitely like choices and options that the teams can make still, even within it. It's not like anybody's hands are tied and they have to actually do one thing. So I think I just, no matter what it said, I was like, I'm just gonna go and do what I can and do my best.
So did you have any contact with the Red Sox after, like, did you hear from anyone with the Red Sox?
Crockett called me, and he just called me, really let me know that, like, I was Rule 5 drafted, and he's like, we wish you the best.
Yeah,
essentially. It was a pretty somber tone, but it's kind of a sad day there.
Yeah.
Shortly after, obviously, Fold and Dombrowski called, and they said, hey, we Rule 5'd you, and welcome to the organization and everything. So it was like a really bittersweet thing. But
So the other where were you, obviously, is when you got cleared.
Yeah, that one kind of was that one was almost like more of a gradual thing, because like there was like, they started to like kind of like hint at certain points, like when they didn't send me on my deployment, I was like, well, like, why am I not going, basically? And that was at the end of January, and then I was like, why am I not going? And then later on, just one day, all of a sudden, they're just like, oh, like, you're separating. And I was like, well, okay, thank you. So, and then it was like a week turnaround or something from there, and like everything was expedited in the Navy. Like, they do not work separations that fast normally, and there was a lot of stuff that kind of like, even now I'm still kind of like trying to communicate with them on certain things. But I'm 100% cleared to leave and everything, February 21st I was separated, but there was just a lot of like, they had not worked with it that fast before,
right?
So everybody was trying to kind of rush in a little bit.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where would you have been deployed to? Do you know, have it done?
Japan.
Okay.
Yeah, we have PA squadrons all over in the Pacific. So,
okay.
That was where I was headed. And go do God's work over there.
Yeah.
So, is there a part of you that, you know, I mean... This is incredible, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is an opportunity that very few people get in their lifetimes.
Yeah.
Major League Clubhouse.
Yeah.
At the same time, is there a part of you that's like, I've worked really, really hard?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And honestly, that was a little bit of like, I don't want to say frustration, but like a little bit of a, like a hesitation that I had coming back, because I was like, well, all my friends are going overseas, and I'm going to have to live with that, you know? And like, obviously, we're like, they're well-trained, and you hope nothing happens, but like at the same time, you know, you know, there's risk involved, and you're supposed to be in that situation. So, there's always going to be that, and there's always going to be the fact that like it was fun. I liked what I did, so a lot. But you know, this is really fun too. So, it really is two planets for me. So,
Are you, when you started throwing coming back here, how close did you feel you were to the last time you pitch competitively?
It was so hard to gauge that, because like I think like a lot of times the way you feel is not exactly like the way you're performing, and so I knew I could feel that I still was nowhere close to what I was, but I didn't feel like I was like completely starting fresh either. But I did know that there's gonna be a lot of work as far as like getting back into throwing shape, because the arm just didn't feel quite as lively, and it also just didn't feel quite as in shape, I guess. And even now, it's like still like it's just it takes a while. It takes a while, unfortunately. Like, no matter how much care you try to get and everything, there's still only 24 hours in the day, and you have to just do the most of the time with the time that you have. So
you know, at the time that you were, you know, in 19, your command was like, you know, was excellent with your, you know, was it commander stuff that like you, where you found the bigger gap?
It was everything. Yeah. Really, I mean, like any part of pitching was I felt like I was struggling with off speed command, just throwing off speed in general.
Yeah.
Even down to just the grips.
Yeah.
Some of it felt uncomfortable. Like the fastball grip was still, it's like I was trying to feel for what that feeling was for a while, and just a connection with the body, the whole delivery, everything just kind of felt forced, I guess, a little bit, and it just was not very fluid, and it's just something that it's almost like the brain needs to like kind of like make the connection with the body again. It's just been a very long time.
Not so, quite riding a bike.
No, not well. Yeah, not quite. But I do think, given enough time, I do think eventually, like once it does kind of click, it'll kind of like happen faster at the end than at the beginning, as far as like the recovery, the remembering.
What's your understanding in terms of the Rule 5 process, in terms of with your injury and being returned or staying or?
I mean, I'm not oblivious to the fact that I know that there's like a possibility that I can like be returned to Boston and all that. And then I think there's some other stuff with like waivers and other teams. But to be honest, I try not to look into the details of it because, one, I don't want to get caught up in like trying to plan out my own future when it's really outside my control as far as
you've done enough of that, right?
Yeah. And then secondly, it's just I don't. It doesn't really matter because like my goal is to come here and try to get better at throwing every day, and it's not try to you know worry about the rules of the Rule 5 draft or anything. So, but at the same time, I don't like being completely ignorant to everything. So I try to understand information as people present it to me. But it's not at the forefront of my mind every day, I guess. So.
Go ahead.
What is your health status at this point?
I feel like I had the tightness in the back last week, and it's been a recovery process since. The training staff's really like we've been working like every day, and we're working with it. I feel like I'm like getting better, and I feel like there's definitely like a lot of progression. But I mean, only time will tell. Like any other recovery, so.
The last, where were you? Where were you when you watched the movie?
Oh, I was actually in Pensacola, Florida, because I was visiting my brother for flight school, and I had to convince him because he's not a Tom Cruise fan, so I had to convince him to go watch it, and then he watched it, and then right after the movie, he walked out, and he's like, okay, that was a really good movie. And ever since then, he's like been all about Jets. So I mean, well, he's always been about Jets, but he kind of like. Got that cool factor again, I guess.
But what's the part that hit home the most for you in that movie?
So it's actually funny. It has nothing to do with the Jets.
Just the beach. Just the playing football on the beach, right?
No. There's a. So like my plane was the PA, which was like, you know, we're considered like a big wing, just like a big boy in the sky. But they never showed a scene with the PA, but they did show a scene with an E2, which is another option of like our pipeline. You know, something that we like trained a little bit with. Like while we were still in flight school, so when we saw that was when all the NFOs were like, oh, like that's our scene of the movie, you know. So like, because everything else is just about jet pilots. So but I do have a friend who is trained to be a jet pilot right now, and I have like all the respect to them, because it's they do things at very high speed, and they have to make decisions really, really, really quick, and they got to be really, really good pilots. So you know, they definitely earned their title. So.
Did your friend say, okay, I could have done that?
No, he was the one who complained to me after moving. He's just like, apparently nobody briefs anymore. because that in flight school, that's like the killer. It's just like waking up for the brief and prepping the brief. So especially with Jets.
Yeah.
Aside from Ben Crockett, did you hear from anyone else with the Red Sox? Like it was like obviously, you had the Premier 12 experience with like Dahlbeck and Halk and, you know, anything like that?
On the player side, it mostly was the guys that I played with in Lowell.
Yeah.
Ryan Serafinjan reached out, Cody Scroggins reached out, and they just said, like, hey, man, congrats, like, whatever. Like, like, oh, we hope to see you again, but like, you know, we understand, like, I think they understood kind of like what was happening too, but yeah, I mean, I hope the best for them, and I kind of miss that I don't get to go back to playing with them, because it was kind of our whole thing in Lowell is like we all want to go up together and, yeah, and everything, and just like anybody else playing, but you know, life happens, and you don't always get to choose how things work out. So
I mean, how wild is that to think of, like, those guys have been, like, you know, have been grinding through their own development over the last couple of years. They're still, you know, yeah, kind of lower levels, right? Like, you're in a position where, not having pitched baseball in 3 years, it's like you have a chance to be on a major league roster this year. Yeah.
No, that's why I definitely take that very seriously, and I try to respect the fact that there are people who were working at baseball the whole time while I was working at something else, and that's why it's not something that necessarily that I feel too comfortable about, in the sense of I know that I'm not ready. I know that I'm not exactly what a typical Rule 5 draftee would be, as far as like prepared, but I just try to like be respectful of that and try to keep my head down and kind of try to earn my keep every day, and at least I hope that people understand that I am trying to progress no matter what happens, and I'm really okay with how anything turns out, even if it means that I'm not on a big league roster or anything. I'm here to try to come back into baseball. It's not obviously you want to compete and everything, but the real goal is to try to be reintegrated to baseball. So,
did you get to a point of facing hitters like live BP or anything?
No, haven't gotten to that point.
So the last time you did that was in the Premier 12.
That's correct. Yeah, so that'll be another kind of a culture shock again. But I'm confident that by then I'll at least be more confident in my ability, because I'll have enough time off the mound and everything by then.
Is that prospect exciting to you? Just like being on a mound and like, you know,
yeah, I think about it sometimes. I think especially as time's gone on and my catch play started to feel like better and better and better, and I feel like, oh, okay, like I'm actually making steps throwing wise and everything. I start to think about, oh, like I kind of remember what it was like to face hitters and everything like that, and how much fun that is. I get excited for that.
I know. Spring training.
Yeah,
this is your first spring training.
Yeah, it is. It's this is not how I expected the first one to go. I didn't know if I was even going to have one, but I think I wouldn't have it any other way now. So
I know it's simplistic, but did you ever get like radar gun on you?
A bunch of like metrics and stuff, but it was not something that we were like looking really at, because for me it was more about. Or for our pitching coach, to me, was more about, hey, we want to just, like, basically, like, regrow you. So they weren't too caught up in the numbers or anything.
Yeah, like that. I don't. It's like saying, like, someone's 40-yard dash, you know. It's like, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, at least not at this point. I'm sure it'll be used as a tool, I think, to measure growth over time, just to measure, like, health status and like conditioning the arm and everything, but or very early on it was not something that was like used for the actual numbers, so at least from what I understand.
I had always kind of wondered whether or not, like, while you were in school, whether or not someone, you know, like an engineer, a naval engineer or something, was going to figure out how to like use some of the radar implements they have there to set you up.
No, it's we definitely don't try to abuse any of the multi-million-dollar equipment.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.